All right, it's 2 o'clock, we can get started. Hi, thanks for coming. Welcome to Real World Job Skills, the open source way. My name is Scott Merrill. If you have any questions, you're welcome to email me, skippy@skippy.net. Skippy.net is my personal domain. I'm also on the Twitters at smerrill, if you wanna talk to me there. I've been using Linux almost exclusively since about 1999. Shortly after I started using it for the first time, I joined the Central Ohio Linux Users Group, and I've been a longtime member of that organization. I'm currently the meeting organizer. Guys, come on in, have a seat. I'm currently the meeting organizer and doing a very terrible job of actually organizing meetings. My earliest recorded open source contribution that I could find in preparation for this was a bug report I filed on MediaWiki in 2004. Like bug number 614 or something, and it's still open, interestingly enough. So every couple of months, I'll get some traction on it. People will, say, that's still a problem, or no, I can't believe this has been open for the last 7 years or 8 years, whatever, and, close it out. So that's been fun to watch. The evolution of my participation in open source has gone from just a consumer with using Linux and various open source projects to contributing bugs, saying, hey, this is broken, help me fix it, to writing documentation saying, this is the way you use this product, to finally contributing core code to a number of different projects over the years. I've been involved, as I said, with Central Ohio Linux Users Group at colug.net, if you're in Ohio, and it's a good mailing list to be on, even if you're not in Ohio, we're not that way. I've also helped organize Ohio Linux Fest for a couple years. Also a good organization and always looking for talented people to get involved. I strongly encourage people to volunteer with Ohio Linux Fest if they can. I'm currently a full-time Linux engineer at Nationwide Insurance right here in Columbus, Ohio, right across the street. So, open source, yay! Right, everybody loves open source. The thing that interests me the most about open source is that there is so much of it, right? You've got the mainstream stuff, Linux, Android, blogs, databases, all that stuff. And then you have all kinds of really crazy niches, right? You've got all kinds of embedded stuff that's really, really interesting in open source. You also have open source on mainframes, right? And you have an open source mainframe emulator. That you don't get much more niche than that, in my opinion. One of the interesting results of all of this open source is that there are lots of people solving the same problems in very different ways. And I think that's a good thing for all of us. And that'll be important a little bit later on. I just don't want to drop that out there. So where can you play with open source? Well, everywhere, obviously. You can run it on home, on your own hardware. You can run on Amazon EC2, Rackspace, DigitalOcean, any number of hosting providers, cloud providers. You can do virtualization with things like Oracle VirtualBox, which was just presented at 1 o'clock. KVM, VMware, all this stuff. The upshot of this is there's no excuse. There's no excuse for you not to be using open source software in some capacity. And I think that the takeaway from that is that you should learn a little about a lot of stuff. If you're a sysadmin, you should probably know a little bit of SQL. You should probably know a little bit of programming, some programming language beyond just bash scripting. If you're a full-time developer, you should probably know a little bit of sysadmining. You should understand the systems on which your system is running. Specialization is good, but I would argue that generalization is better. So when we talk about open source, for the context of this discussion, there's going to be a couple of things. There's core competencies, what I call like the foundational technologies. These are things like infrastructure, your operating systems, your networking, programming languages, databases. According to Wikipedia, there are more than 250 unique distributions of Linux. Some of them are very mainstream, Fedora, Debian, Ubuntu. Some of them are super, super niche. I've never heard of some of these, right? Backtrack Linux, I have Baltics. I don't know what any of these things are. I looked up some of them and they're all interesting in different ways. They all need your help. Every single one of these projects can use your participation. And this is just Linux, by the way. These 250 is just Linux. This doesn't count BSD or ReactOS or any of the other open source operating systems that are out there. Every single one of these has some way for you to get involved and make the project better. That will help the users of that project, and that will help you gain real professional skill with a core technology, operating system technology of some capacity. but maybe sysadmin isn't your thing. Maybe infrastructure isn't your thing. Maybe you want to be a programmer. Again, according to Wikipedia, there are more than 70 unique open source programming languages. This is just languages. This isn't frameworks. Right? Again, Bigloo, Candle, Chicken, I don't know. All right. Some of these are very, you know, mainstream: JRuby, Python, Mono, Perl, Python, PHP. You know, some of these are really foundational elements. So you can sink your teeth in here and really gain programming expertise. But maybe programming isn't your thing. You want to do databases. Well, there's more than 70 open source databases, according to Wikipedia. Lots of options, again. So, you know, you've got your MySQLs, your Mariah, your Mongos, your up-and-comers, but you've also got a whole bunch of crazy things here. If data is your thing, you can gain some really interesting professional skills by working with these open source projects. Right. So those are the big things, but wait, there's more, right? There's also things like configuration management, your Puppet and Chef. You've got things like middleware, the JBoss servers, Wildfire, application servers. You've got things like your programming frameworks, your Node.js, Backbone, CakePHP, Ruby on Rails, version control, Git and Subversion, you know, Mercurial, Bazaar, whatever flavor you want to use. And then beyond just core virtualization, you've got things like Vagrant and Packer and Docker. So there's this all this stuff that you can use and gain, you know, mastery of these things. And the reality is, you know, open source leads the way. And then what open source is doing now, a lot of businesses will be doing in a couple of years. You know, you look at MongoDB, right? Nobody used Mongo a couple years ago, or very few people used Mongo a couple years ago, and now everyone's using Mongo. So if you have Mongo expertise, you're in demand. So those are like the big picture items, I think, the big ticket items. But what I want to talk about today is to help people identify all the ancillary, the peripheral skills that you can gain through being involved with open source software. And all of these things will help you in your job, either help you get a job or help you make a better employee at your job. So the first one's bug reports. This is where I got started. And this is actually a lot harder than a lot of people think. I mean, anybody can say it doesn't work. But writing a good bug report needs to say, these are the exact steps I took, and this is exactly where it falls apart. You need to be able to reproduce the problem. You need to describe it in such a way that someone else can reproduce it also in their environment. And you need to have some patience for the back and forth to own that bug report over time. It's important because this is basic troubleshooting at some level, right? And this is what everyone's going to do in their day job, and if they have a technical job, and maybe even a non-technical jobs, I don't know. But everyone has to use troubleshooting in some capacity. So the better you are at writing open source bug reports, the better you're going to be when you go to work, working with your teammates, working with people, other tiers, other towers, whatever it is, however your corporate structure is, being able to write a good bug report is going to help you in a lot of different ways. Concurrent with good writing comes documentation. Every single project, every single open source project needs better documentation. That's just a reality. Every single one will benefit from better documentation. You look at the really big, established, successful projects like the Linux kernel, some of the major programming languages, Python, PHP, you look at the Apache HTTPD project, all of those projects are successful because they have outstanding documentation. Every single one of those. Writing documentation is hard. It requires discipline. It requires subject matter expertise. You have to really understand the thing that you're writing about. And so it's not a trivial thing. And who here works in a job where you have to document something that you do so that the next guy comes along can reproduce what you've done, right? The better you are at doing this, the better your job is going to be, right? The better off you're going to make life for somebody else. So another skill, technical skill you can acquire with open source software is packaging. Remember all those 250 Linux distributions? If you find some piece of software that doesn't have a package, you're going to make some number of users really, really happy if you can figure out how to package it up for them. Whether that's, you know, apt and dpackage, whether it's RPM, whether it's Arch Linux Pacman, whether it's Gentoo ports, whatever it is, if you can package some software, you know, that's the first step to automation. In order to really be able to automate things at my day job, but probably at yours too, you've got to be able to install software in a repeatable process, and packaging is the first step to that. So this is an important element. It's an important skill that people don't really think about a whole lot. a lot of homegrown applications. If you develop applications internally for your organization, they're going to be deployed through a package management system of some capacity. So this is a skill that you can really develop and hone through your participation in open source. And support. People don't think about support as a technical skill, but I think absolutely it is. Right? You're dealing with customer-facing issues by directly dealing with those customers. You're dealing with human beings. This can happen real time. It can happen asynchronously, whether it's over a bug report, if you're shepherding bugs for people who are reporting them to you, or if you're dealing in an IRC channel or a phone call or at the bar, you know, wherever this might occur. The better you are at providing support, the better employee you're going to be in the long run, because support is all about human beings, right? It's personal interactions. There's cultural issues come into play, language differences come into play, all sorts of stuff people don't think about. The other thing about support is that if you're providing support, you need to meet the user where they are at. You cannot expect them to come to where you are with the technical mastery, right? So you've got to find that common denominator. Not every technical role or in a job has a support issue. You know, you might not be providing technical support directly, but you're going to be helping your peers probably. You're going to be talking to your manager who can't get the thing to work, whatever it is. And the more you participate in open source, the more you can learn how to do this stuff. And Lord knows open source needs all the help it can get this way. Every single project needs help with support. You're going to make people happy, because this is the area where there's most churn. There's the most turnover in terms of participation. People get into a project, they start helping out, they get, you know, they answer some questions on the mailing list, they do some, you know, some bug shepherding, then they get bored and they move on to something else. So this is something that it's hard to do. If you're a developer, if you're a programmer, writing tests for your code is absolutely a critical skill to have these days. More and more open source projects will not accept contributions without tests included. So it's important that you learn how to do this. I'm not a developer, so I don't know how to do it. But I know that all of my developer friends are talking more and more about the importance of testing, the importance of breaking down, you know, commits into small testable chunks, so that the people on the upstream end reviewing that submission can review it and say, oh yeah, I see exactly what's happening. All the unit tests passed, instead of this huge blob that, okay, it does what you claim it to do, but they can't really parse it very well. Testing is a commitment to quality, and it shows that you care about the project as much as your contribution to that project. And my understanding is that more and more organizations, professional development companies, are doing testing as well. Then user experience. This was one that a buddy of mine recommended to me in terms of a technical skill, and I kind of scoffed at first. The more I thought about it, the more he was absolutely right. This is way more than just user interfaces. This isn't just a responsive design for a website. This isn't just a mobile applications interface. This is the way the user experiences the product. And it's not just end user. Who here has written an SE Linux policy? Who here turns SE Linux off? Right. Because the experience sucks, right? The experience is terrible, right? Who likes writing sendmail M4? Right, configurations or POSIX configurations. Right? Who really enjoys doing that stuff? Nobody, because it's terrible. Right? That's what we talk about when we talk about user experience. If you can figure out a way to write an awesome experience for whatever application it is, if you can make your config file make sense, make it intuitive, make it easy to use, reduce the friction, all of those things are important user experience elements. And again, open source is desperate for this sort of stuff. It's desperate for this sort of thinking, and all of this stuff is going to trickle over into your day job and the way you look at problems and products at work. All of this stuff will make you a better person. So that's the technical stuff, right? What else about open source in terms of job skills can you get? Well, there's all sorts of non-technical skills. These are all the soft skills, right? And some of these are going to be kind of duplicated from the stuff I talked about earlier, right? Problem solving. You have to problem solve. You've got to look at the way systems interact. You've got to look at integrations. You've got to find out where the weaknesses are, where the brittle elements are. And this goes back to one of the very first things I said about open source, that there's so much of it. You're exposed to so many different ways to solve problems. It gives you more options, right? So maybe you can't get Apache to do what you want to do. Maybe try Nginx. Maybe try Lite HTTPD. Maybe MariaDB isn't your MySQL replacement. Maybe you really want to go to EnterpriseDB. You know, if you don't know what the options are, you're really kind of stuck with whatever the vendors want to sell you, you know, in a professional context. So I would argue that problem solving, you know, you have more lateral thinking with open source experience, you get all these options available to you. You can kind of pick and choose what you want. This also changes in some companies. There's a build versus buy decision. Are we going to build a solution or are we going to buy what a vendor sells us? And if you don't know what you can produce, if you don't know what problems people are solving in unique and creative ways, you won't know what you can build on your own. You're just going to buy. And maybe that's the right thing for your organization. Maybe that's best. But at least where I'm at, what I would argue is you should probably explore what you can produce yourself first. I think that's the way I look at problem solving, at least. Back again with the support issues and the documentation, communication is vitally important to your job. You know, the more people you talk to online, the better you're going to be at writing. You're going to be more succinct. You're going to be more clear. You're going to be less ambiguous. Ideally, you should be. And this is a skill. This doesn't happen overnight. You don't join an open source project and suddenly, oh, well, I'm the world's best communicator. You know, you develop it over time. You get better at it iteratively. A key aspect of communication in my mind is also open source advocacy at work. A lot of companies are afraid of open source still. Whose throat do they choke if something goes wrong? And I would say that if you are involved with open source projects, you know what can be done, you know what you can build in the build versus buy discussions. You can communicate those articulately because you have work experience outside of work to say, look, these are the things that I have done with this project. These are the ways that I've contributed to this project to make it kick ass. Let's do that here at work. Let's roll that out here. Another soft skill that you gain from open source is really a real good understanding of teamwork, right? A lot of teams are just marginally functional or outright dysfunctional in corporations. And that can happen in open source communities as well. But open source communities, teamwork is critical, right? When you look at look at any GitHub project, right? Or Google code hosting project. Look at the number of developers that are involved and then look at the number of outstanding open bug reports. Right? If there's only two or three core committers or core contributors to a project and there's 50 or 60 open bugs, well, they're swamped. They need more help. They can't scale out with what they're doing. They need to delegate work. They need to get a team involved with support. They need to branch out. And it's the same thing in your day jobs. You know, everyone hears stories about, the rock star developer who does all things or the rock star sysadmin who solves the company's problems overnight. But those are so few and far between. Right, we all need to work together. So I'm going to write some documentation. You're going to commit some code. You're going to do some end user support. And then we all shuffle it up and do a little bit more, lather, rinse, repeat. So another important skill is professional networking. The people you meet working with open source projects will have the answers to the questions you will find. All right. There's rarely a day that goes by where I don't bounce a question off a buddy of mine. You know, I'm not a developer by training. I'm not a database engineer by training. But my job requires that I touch all those components in different ways. And so I have people literally all over the world that I can ask questions of, and they can provide, answers. I'm not saying that they're all right all the time. But I can get, I can build up a consensus of opinion based on, Michael in Australia says this, Michael in Germany says this, Owen in Philadelphia says this, and I start to piece together a better picture of stuff that I don't know anything about. And maybe they don't know the answers, but they read a blog post somewhere, a couple weeks ago about this thing, and they can point me to it, and it makes me a better person. It makes me more informed about whatever the technology it is I need. And then just speaking broadly, participation in open source is a global community. You're going to meet really awesome people and interesting people, and it's going to expand your worldview, and you'll have more interesting conversation at the water cooler. So how do you do all this? How do you leverage all of this stuff? Who here has a GitHub account? Okay. Who here lists their GitHub account on their resume? For those of you that aren't doing that, why aren't you doing that? But you have one. Why would you not demonstrate that I know what GitHub is? You might not have your own repositories. You have history there. You have a track record there that people can go look at. Why would you not advertise that? If you filed bug reports, why are you not listing those bug reports, at least in your cover letter when you apply for a job? Why don't you say, here's my Launchpad account. these are the bugs I've opened and shepherded over the course of these different projects, right? This is the breadth of stuff in which I'm interested in participating. Right? It makes you an interesting person. It makes you a more interesting candidate for a job. Same thing with documentation. If you've written documentation for a project, why aren't you singing that to the high heavens about, I wrote this, this is awesome. That's great for applying for a job, right? You can advertise yourself those ways. If you're already at a job, how do you socialize your contributions in those ways? How do you make it known? That's a little trickier, and it's going to be different for every organization and every culture. But you should definitely be talking to your managers or your teams, or you know, depending on the corporate structure, that you know, your CIOs, and say, these are the things that I do. This is the work that I've contributed to a successful open source project. You know, I have made useful contributions. I'm proud of them. And they've made the project better. And I don't think a lot of people think that way. It's been my experience, at least, that people don't think about doing that very often. So again, when a problem comes up at work and you need to solve some brand new problem that no one's ever faced before, are you going to go run to IBM and buy whatever they sell? Or are you going to say, oh, hey, Scott, you've worked on something like that in your free time, right? So it starts to generate new ideas. And that is my whopping presentation. So now we have question and answer. If anybody has questions, we can have a discussion. This is the part that I prefer. Any questions, any comments, observations? Scott, you suck. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't think about that. So he mentioned translation. You know, I said open source is global. And translation is actually really, really hard. The translation tools are usually pretty cumbersome and complex. Idioms are hard to translate. It's hard to write strings in ways that you can insert numbers. My experience with that is actually very off-putting, and I don't like to do it because it's so hard. It's definitely a skill. You're absolutely right. They're coming for us. I can just shout back to questions. Anything else? Anybody have anything? Yeah, go ahead.
Certification?
That's trickier. It's hit or miss. I think, personally speaking, only for myself, in a past life, I was a Microsoft certified engineer. And I thought that was an important skill to have, or an important feather in my cap. And I pretty quickly found out that that wasn't the case. I think it depends on the industry, and I think it depends on the quality of the cert. There was a time when Microsoft cert, they were practically giving them out, right? You could pass a test without ever having used the product. I would hope that they've remedied that. Did they?
Yeah.
Okay. And I know other, okay, good. I know other companies and other products are not, you know, they're hard to earn. I think it demonstrates that you have a commitment to learning something in a formalized, structured environment. And I think that's very important for a lot of people. But I don't know that given the choice between someone who has a certification and someone who has this awesome GitHub page where they've contributed all this stuff, right? The cert tells me you passed a test, right? And the GitHub page or your SourceForge page or your Google code page, all of those show me a real public history of the things that I can look at and vet. Say, oh, it's not just that you passed a test, you've actually contributed. You've answered these really hard oddball questions. You've been involved for more than 2 years, right? So I think certification is a good starting point for a lot of people, but I think that in the broader context, I don't think it's sufficient. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So hopefully we can all help work to change that. We can all start making to our employers known that there's this awesome open source world out there, and there's ways that people can demonstrate their participation and their subject matter expertise. So for those of you that didn't hear, I want to make sure I repeat that correctly. You say that you think certification actually is more important.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I hear what you're saying. So the comment is that certification benefits a job applicant because it's a known quantity. Hiring managers and HR people understand, the certification process. They understand what a cert is. Even if they don't know the specific certification, maybe they know that you got certified by some training facility somewhere and passed a test. And so, yeah, it's a baseline that a lot of people can use to weed out potential candidates. And so in that case, if you don't have a cert or if you are heavily invested in open source, I think that's where your cover letter comes in. If you're applying for a job, you need to demonstrate in your cover letter the importance of all the stuff you've done. In the last couple of jobs I applied for, I made it clear that I was the meeting organizer for the Central Ohio Linux Users Group, and I know that was a key differentiator for me. It was told to me that was a key element why I got the interview, at least. And then I was able to parlay the interview into a job. And then even speaking at events like this, right? We should be putting events like this, speaking engagements like this, somewhere in a cover letter or on a resume list of accomplishments somewhere. Yeah, I spoke to 50 people at the Ohio Linux Fest, right, on open source stuff. I'm perceived as someone who knows something at least about open source software. These are all things that we should be socializing and advocating and selling for ourselves. Yeah. Just one.
you spoke earlier to generalizing versus specializing. Mm-hmm. And I definitely lean towards the generalizing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I hear about the silos and it's just mostly sort of fears and it's
dead. Sure.
How much does that hurt, though? Because, everyone, well, my situation right now, for instance, I'm about to, within about a year or so, graduate with a degree in IT software. Clearly, there's demand for databases, both admin and developers.
Sure.
Clearly, just to get my development environment running, I've had to learn a lot about the demand. How much does it hurt to be able to say, hey, I assume that makes the demand for the demand.
How much does it hurt to be a generalist? I would argue that it does not hurt at all. I am hard pressed. I'm sure there's anecdotal. I'm sure we can all come up with anecdotal evidence of where it's been a problem. But I'm having a hard time thinking of a situation, a real world situation, where that would be an impediment to your success. The example, it depends on the organizations you go to. It depends on the kind of company you work in. If you work in a huge, Fortune 100, Fortune 50 organization where they've got, ITIL and all these processes and you've got a storage team and a network team and a mainframe team and a platform team, then sure, if you're a DBA, you're not going to get down to do any of the platform stuff, right? And if you're a platform guy, you're not going to get up and twiddle any of the Oracle settings, right? You're going to be very focused. If you're in a smaller shop or maybe someplace that's a little more flat hierarchically, the jacks of all trade are going to be better off because, we're having this network problem, or we're having a database problem. Oh, actually, it's an OS problem because the CCTL values are wrong. I can fix that right now. I don't have to open a ticket and go through change control. It's a little faster response time. So I don't know. Can anybody think of an example where being a generalist sucks?
Their jobs, and this is why I did the anecdotal as a generalist. Their jobs, they want experts. They want, I want to see if you've done nothing but, product X for the last 7 years of your life. You have that for skill, and so it's awesome magic. That's the job that guy will get, where it's not going to get the generalist job. But,
and then Product X gets bought by Oracle and they kill it and you're screwed.
That'd be so hard. What you see as a generalist, I think you can do a higher quality job. When you have to pass something off, like you said, the system right. You can be able to say, hey, here's the whole list, not just the problem.
Right.
So I do think generalists are going to be able to qualify.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Most modern roles are going to require a full set. Those who are limited in the specific technology. done by that firmware. Now, what that says, generalism kind of has an opportunity for negative context, right? I'm a generalist, I'm full stack, but I specialize in people, right? And I'm better at these things than most people with this. So, generalism in itself doesn't mean that you can't be really good at a few things, but in the future, if you don't have a full stack,
yeah, think about like college or university, right? When you go to, you have to declare a major, but they still want you to pass English and math and some sciences and some other stuff, right? My degree's in philosophy, right? I've got a BA in philosophy, right? Because language and liberal arts are my thing. That's what I'm interested in personally. Professionally, there's no job in philosophy. I don't want to be a professor. So that's what that's the analogy that I make a lot of times, right? You're going to go to college, you're going to make declare a major, and you're going to be better at that than you're going to be at the stuff that you didn't major in, hopefully, unless you're some savant and really good at stuff. But I don't think, you know, I think Warner's comment is very accurate. You know, you're going to be a generalist, but you're going to be better at some stuff. You're going to have a specific interest in some things. You know, I'm a generalist. I understand a little bit of SQL. You know, I understand a little bit of programming languages, but I'm an infrastructure guy. Linux is where it's at for me. The OS, the networking, those are the things that really get my blood flowing. If you give me a SQL join, I'll have to struggle through it. I understand what it is. I can talk to you about what's happening, but I couldn't write one my own, right? Let's go to this guy, and we'll come back to you, okay?
I think the other advantage of being a generalist is rather than coming in, touching a box, typing in lines of Java, you get to do a bit of everything.
Unless you want to just write Java all day, and then God save your soul. Yeah, right. There's a guy back here. Yeah.
Also, I think it's really a good thing about being a generalist is when you need to pick up something else to do,
right,
the problem, it's a lot easier because you've got a broader background.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you're already mentally limber in a way, right? If you're a Java developer all day long, and you suddenly have to do Linux sysadmin stuff, you're really going to be in trouble, right? Yeah, you have one more question.
Yeah, I'm fairly new to open culture, just like PyCamp in Ohio, mm-hmm, and from all of these. Yeah, that's where we met first. When I noticed you gave a list of various things that you can do to contribute to open culture, that's also historical.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that getting started, it would be better to, for instance, contribute documentation of the course to the existing project as opposed to starting a brand new project from scratch?
Yes, but not for the reasons you probably think. Open source is goofy, right? It's hard. You're dealing with people, and there's all sorts of governance problems. There's all sorts of leadership issues and personality conflicts. And even in successful projects, look at Linux, right? Linus Torvalds is a jerk. He is. I would not want to be a kernel contributor because he's a jerk. And I don't want to spend my free time writing contributing core code that he's just going to rip apart. That's just not the way that I want to do it. So I would say contributing to a new project is a better way to learn open source culture. It's a better way to learn the ins and outs of stewardship and governance and participation, because you'll see in a much less threatening way what other people are doing. If you go out and start your own project, oh, I'm going to make this awesome new thing. I'm going to solve a problem, right? I'm going to make a project. How do you advertise it? How do you get people to come help you with it? How do you get people to come file bug reports? How do you own the whole life of that project? What happens when you get bored? Who's going to work on it? What happens when you get 700 bug reports on the same day? You can't fix them all. Right, so I would say that participation in an established open source project, it doesn't have to be a big one, it doesn't have to be Linux or Python or PHP or Apache. You can find some small fry little project that you like and find out what the community's like. Find out what it's like to be a member of a global community working across time zones to solve problems, learn the tools of the trade, IRC, mailing lists, Google groups, whatever it is. I think it'd be better served that way, but that's kind of anathema. Everyone's like, oh, I've got a problem in open source. I can solve the world and, you know, I can be the hero. Maybe. Yeah.
There's a project I'm
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there's no real penalty to putting something online for public consumption. I would say give it a good license. Give it a license with which you are comfortable. Understand the differences between GPL and BSD and MIT and Apache. So you understand. So if you put something out there and you BSD it and someone takes it and runs with it and gets all the fame and glory, that's you should have known what you're getting into, right? If you make a GPL and no one contributes because everyone hates the GPL these days, well, then, there you go. The other thing to keep in mind, though, is if once you put it public, you might get people using it, and they might be expecting more than you are at this time, right? So if you put up a project and say, here's Uber 5000, right? And the documentation kind of stinks, but you know how to put it all together, right? Because it's your little pet project. Someone else is going to come along and say, I tried to run Uber 5000 and I couldn't get it to work on PC Linux OS version 2, which you've never heard of, right? Or Bitfrost Linux, or whatever it is. Pick one of those 250 we looked at. And it didn't work, and your documentation sucks, and you suck. Right? Because that's really, again, writing bug reports is hard. That's what people say. This thing sucks. You should have done a better job. Right? So be prepared for that. Be advised that may happen. But other than that, no, I don't think there's a real problem with putting incomplete partial code up there. Someone might look at it and find it and say, oh, wow, that was a really clever way to solve that problem. I don't care about the rest of your project, but I really like that algorithm. I really like what you've done for user accounts. I really like the way you've done your sign-up screen, whatever it is. And they might borrow that. They might consume that. And then we all win, right? And that's what open source is about. Maybe my project sucked, but maybe my project makes your project just a little bit better, and then we all advance. Yeah, go ahead.
So I struggle with as well as I've gone through high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in two places. One, they haven't started their career yet, I think.
Sure.
And two, they're beginning with computer science.
Okay. Teamwork.
Okay.
Teamwork, absolutely. For younger kids like that, there's a bunch of other social issues that come into play that I would talk about. You're establishing your digital footprint, mm-hmm. right? The stuff you're doing now is going to be available for public scrutiny in 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think teamwork is important, being able to be a team player, not trying to hotshot everything. Recognize that other people have good ideas. Recognize that other people have valuable contributions to whatever it is you're working on, and then being able to express differences and discrepancies in respectful ways. Your code sucks, not you suck, right? And it's hard. The kids don't think that way. Hell, I still don't think that way sometimes, right? It's just, it doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. I would definitely say that. And then this is an opportunity. They're green, right? They don't know anything. I would encourage them to find something that really excites them. Don't teach them Visual Basic .NET, right? Which is what high schools still teach in a lot of places, right? Maybe they don't need to learn Python. Maybe it's Ruby. Maybe they don't need to learn programming. Maybe they want to learn networking, whatever it is. Give them an opportunity to really see what all's out there and find out what they're excited by and what gets their juices flowing, and then find ways to help, enable that. Right.
We'll teach them, right now we are doing Python, but I'm not teaching them Python how and why.
Right. Right. Yeah, well, I used to work at mechanical engineering at OSU, and there was an ongoing struggle there between the faculty and the industry partners with whom they worked on a regular basis. And the faculty wanted to teach. They wanted to educate, and the companies, the Hondas and the big companies, they want the kids to come out of engineering school knowing how to use the tools they use. right? CATIA or whatever the software modeling projects are they are. So the companies want instruction. Here's how you use the tool. And the profs are like, no, we don't care which tool you're using. You got to understand the foundation, right? Understand the principles. So great, you learned to program. Do you know how to solve a problem? Right? You know how to solve the objectives that I put in front of you. Does that mean you know how to really design a user management system? All right, or solve problems for user life cycles or whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a good point. Absolutely. Problem solving, critical thinking, very important. That has nothing to do with computers, right? That could be, you know, woodworking just as much, right? But solving problems. Yeah, back there. I would hate to be the guy that tells someone who can do something that they shouldn't do it, right? I don't want to say, you know, you're going to solve the world. No, don't do that. You know, so I don't want to stand up here and tell you what to do. I would argue, try both. You know, they're not mutually exclusive, I don't think, right? If you want to make some big, awesome project, it's not monolithic. It's going to be built on top of other pieces. It's going to involve lots of little steps along the way. So while you're working on that big, awesome project, you can also be doing other stuff, right? There's only so many hours in the day, and sometimes you're going to get bored or frustrated. You're going to hit a problem on your big project that you just can't do anymore. You need to take a break and let your mind relax and kind of work behind the scenes. Go write code on some other project. Go find a bug. Go play video games and report a bug on how crappy this game is or something, right? Whatever it is, right? Write documentation, idle an IRC when someone comes in and say, hey, how do I set up this? Well, this is how you do it. Write blog posts and then link your blog posts to people when they ask questions, right? All of that stuff can be done. I don't think it's mutually exclusive at all. And just don't learn Java. No, I know. And no, look, Java is a lingua franca business, right? It's either Java or .NET these days. In terms, what's that? That's corporate. I would say that's the corporate world. The corporate world is Java and .NET for the most part. You get a little Perl hangover. Do you see people writing enterprise applications in Ruby? No, because gems suck, right? And corporate firewalls don't allow you to access gems and whatever. So it is what it is. Java is. It's as good as any other language to learn. And from there, you can learn something else. You can springboard if you want to be a developer. You had a question back there?
Yeah, well, when you're still distance-teaching, that also helps.
Sure.
Because my teaching stuff is more interesting, but it's a project of having, I guess, the one that will help the team with something new that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Stewardship and sponsorship and coaching, all of those things are important. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I didn't specifically call that out, but that's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Oh my God. Any other questions, comments, criticisms, concerns? No. Everybody should go home tonight, and file a bug. File a bug on an open source project, something that's been sticking in your craw, right? This doesn't work right. And you can write, you know, a thing that people don't think about is you can file a bug against documentation. If the docs don't say something or if they're incorrect, file a bug. Make the docs better, right? Because you're going to help the next guy comes along. My buddy Rich Bowen, who's the primary author for most of the Apache HTTP documentation, he's been doing it for about 10 years, and he is the reason why their docs are so good. He's been working on a book now for a couple years called Write a Better FM. And it's all about the skills he's learned participating in open source and listening to people. You know, if you see a project that has an FAQ, that's a fundamental sign that something is wrong. If it's frequently asked, why isn't it in the documentation? Why isn't it answered earlier before I get to the point where I need to read the FAQ? Right? So open source has these paradigms, these tropes that we often use, right? Oh, well, I'm not going to fix the docs. I'll just write an FAQ, skim the FAQ, and then you're ready to go. No, that's wrong. Fix it upstream. Fix the docs. So everybody should go home and write a bug. File a bug report. Make the world a better place. Please.
Yay!
Woo!